Hello and welcome to the Geek Embassy Watches Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and tonight I'm here with Dante, Liam, and Nicole. Say hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hello. Somebody had to say that joke.
I mean, of course. Say it every single time.
I know, almost. I try not to sometimes, but... All right, so we are here to talk about the last two episodes of Season 1, Star Trek Discovery, available on CBS All Access in the United States and available in Canada, where Liam is watching from, on Crave TV. Yes?
Yes.
That sounds great.
It is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So
I wish we had a free streaming service to go ahead and watch this stinking show. Not that I'm bitter or anything, and not like that's been a theme for the past like 7 or 8 episodes that we've been doing this.
We've just said that through the entire season, but I actually have some things to say about them putting it on All Access about these episodes, so we can get to that later, though.
Oh, yes, we can.
we're going to do a very quick recap and then jump into our discussion. So episode 14 is War Without, War Within. And episode 15 is Will You Take My Hand? Subtitled by Dante, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Michelle Yeoh.
I mean, because that's really the theme of this entire series. Let's be real here.
We're going to make you wait. We're going to give you 2 episodes with her and then 1 like flashback hologram scene. Then we're going to make you wait until the last 4 episodes to have her back again.
Yeah.
And of course, by the
her
way,
reveal is still like one of the best moments of TV ever, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
She came back as the Emperor. Like, yeah. Still one of the best things ever, because I totally had fallen out of my head that she could come back. So,
yeah. Yep.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Spoil the entire season, because we'll probably touch on all of them since this is the season finale. And there is a season 2 of the show. So, yeah. So just keep that in mind as you're listening. So let's see. Major plot points. The Discovery is boarded by... Okay, so at the end of 13 is they finally jump back to the Prime Universe using some Trek magic.
Science. Yeah, Trek magic. And it ends with Stamets saying, well, we've been gone for 9 months. Come back.
Right. So. Yeah, and that's the end of that episode. So then the first thing that they... Well, and then they first discover that there's no real... there's been devastating loss in the war against the Klingons, that they've lost many of the planets and many of their ships, and they're holding a very small piece of Federation space still against them.
Yes.
So Admiral Cornwell, who you might remember as having conflicted with Lorca.
Yep. She and Sarek both board the ship.
Right.
unconvinced that this is the real Star Trek Discovery.
Yes. Right.
Or at the very least unconvinced that that these are the real people who claim to be this crew.
Right.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, they're in the middle of a war they're losing, so I give them a little... I cut them a little slack for being suspicious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My one confusion was that I was fairly certain that... I had just clearly misinterpreted it. I had really thought that Cornwell was dead. Because I thought that when Ash and... When Ash and Burnham were sort of running around in that in the fall finale, on the Klingon ship, that they saw a corpse and it was Cornwell. I haven't gone back to watch it, but
they shot her with something that like brought her back to life, right? I don't even know what it was.
Okay,
Trek magic.
She had Trek magic. In the fight, she had been thrown up against like a bulkhead or something and she had collapsed.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Okay,
yeah.
Yeah, it was unclear whether or not she was unconscious or dead.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. I know they never went up to her and went, oh, she's dead. But I just had a weird sensation that when watching it, I interpreted it as, oh, she is dead. Because they did something that made me think that's worse than just a little shakeup. But that wasn't too jarring. I just went, because I mean, I'd seen it in the trailer and everything too. But
Yeah.
So I realized I was wrong, but it was a little strange.
I couldn't remember. what had happened to her, because I feel like the most significant thing that had happened with her character was the fact that she was ready to oust Lorca, and he just sent her to the freaking Klingons. It was like, see ya, oh, we're not going to rescue you. Good luck. Yeah, I follow orders now. Didn't you get the memo?
Yeah, exactly. I follow orders when it's convenient.
Yeah, that's all I really remembered about her storyline. But then she's imprisoned with Laurel, right? And then...
Yep. And she's responsible for getting Laurel to the Discovery that they can use her to figure out a way to disrupt the Klingon invasion.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. But anyway, that's going way back. It has nothing to do with episode 14.
Yeah.
So
yes.
Yeah. So she goes ahead and boards Disco with Sarek in tow.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, Sarek does his whole mind thing, and he realizes, oh, look at that. Yeah, these people are actually who they say they are, and, you know, and what they're telling you is the truth.
I would just like to give a nod to Gene Roddenberry and the original series for the mind meld.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Where would we be without the out that is the mind meld?
Yeah, pretty much. Let's be real here.
Where would Star Trek be without the mind meld? Because it fixes more things than... I mean, it creates problems.
Yes.
You know, it definitely fixes more plot problems.
Mind meld, the original invisibility cloak. Because let's be real here. Harry Potter would get nothing done if it were not for A, Hermione Granger, B, the invisibility cloak.
Right.
Probably be dead inside of like half of a book.
Yeah.
Anyways, also has nothing to do with Star Trek. We're off to a fantastic start.
Right, this is going
to
be quite the show, guys.
So what else happens in this episode? Oh, Burnham officially breaks up with Tyler. basically at Saru's urging, said, and he basically goes ahead and tells her, or is it Stamets? I forget which. Someone tells her, like, you need to go ahead and talk to him.
Yeah. I think it's Tilly, isn't it, Tilly? I mean, Saru tries to get her to go with him when he's in sick bay.
Mm-hmm.
And then he clears him. Yeah, it's in he clears him for like, you know, quarters, so he doesn't have to be locked up. And it's Tilly after she sits with him in the kitchen or whatever. Goes to her and says, of course he's not okay. He's lost the person he cares the most about.
I forgot it was Tilly. But anyway, Burnham actually goes ahead, confronts him. She breaks up with him because when she looks into his eyes, all she sees is Voke. And you know, and Klingons are responsible for murdering her family. So, you know, she's got baggage, and that's perfectly understandable. He cries a lot of man tears. It's wonderful.
There is nothing wrong with man tears.
There's nothing.
That on record.
There's nothing wrong with man tears. Yeah. It's just I have very little sympathy when men cry because,
of the patriarchy.
Or when men cry, when men cry in television, because it's meant to be like such a a big thing, like, oh my god, he's being so emotional. I'm like, seriously, like, dudes cry all the time. You guys can go ahead and not make this a spectacle.
Okay.
That's just my personal bias.
Okay, thank you for explaining that, because
he cries too much. Totally,
he does.
I'm glad that they sent him off.
Kind of. Yeah.
Although who knows if he'll be back
at this point. I feel like that was his way of like saying, I'm not done with you yet.
No, yeah.
Like, I don't think
not. He doesn't know how to quit her.
Right.
Let's
just throw everything in here.
Yeah. So we're gonna move on. Let's see. Tilly and Stamets basically have to like Genesis device an entire unit in order to kickstart the spore drive.
I
because
the same thing.
Yeah. Because look what they're doing. Like Trek magic. Like they've been sitting around trying to figure out how to replenish their spore drive for what feels like 5 or 6 episodes at this point, and they finally are just like, oh yeah, right, let's just go ahead and use this Genesis device that we just happen to have sitting around here, you know, because reasons. Yeah, let's just go ahead and, you know, resurrect Spock while we're at it, you know, let's make that happen.
Had he been down there?
But they don't know that Spock is a person yet. me see here. Klingons blow up a critical starbase, and they are mounting an invasion of Earth.
Bad.
Yeah, it's bad, and that prompts Cornwall into action, and gets her to sign off or greenlight a plan to put, you know, the warrior goddess herself, Philippa Georgiou, into command of Discovery to lead a frontal assault on Kronos, which is exactly what Burnham wanted to do way back in episode 2,
right?
Which was the Vulcan hello.
Right. Which is what got her
court-martialed in the first place.
Well, I mean, it was her mutiny. She tried to do it without orders, but yes, she was saying we need to do this here. So now she's there, you know, which we don't know. We don't know that until the middle of the the last episode, but
And by the way, fans, like, that was one of the most wonderful, ends of an episode that I probably have ever seen, when who walks out on the bridge but Philippa Georgiou, and the entire crew is just sitting, because, you know, Cornwall is just like, oh, you know, like the thought dead but recently recovered Philippa Georgiou, or recently escaped Philippa Georgiou.
Right, yeah.
And meanwhile, Saru and Burnham are just sitting there just like, oh, God, what are they doing?
Right, because to make it clear, it's Mirror Georgiou.
It's Mirror Georgiou.
So it's the evil now has the keys.
Has the keys to the most powerful ship in the galaxy. And they're using it on a half-cocked plan to go assault Kronos, or Quanos, or however you pronounce it in Klingon. Because I have friends who can speak Klingon. I can't. That says a lot about me and the people that I choose to spend time with. Let me see here. But going into episode 15, we've got Tyler is using Voke's memories to determine the best place to destabilize Kronos. Stamets does this really baller ass, like, jump right into basically the middle of the caverns of Kronos. Right. Like, he's something in the neighborhood of like a mile or two underneath the planet's surface.
Yeah.
And
that was pretty awesome, I have to say.
Yeah, and he does it basically without sweating. It's amazing.
Like, no big deal.
Oh yeah, he's just like, am I good or am I good? And of course, he's just sitting there like, we gotta go ahead and be Mr. Law and Order here. Whatever. They move forward with their plan. They are planning on sending a probe down there to look for weak spots or whatever underneath the planet's surface. Whatever, something, you know, techno babble.
You know, Trek babble.
Yeah, techno babble. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the raiding party is Burnham, because obviously, Tilly, because, you know, really, like, Tilly just needs to be everywhere. Ash, because he's the person who's got literal and figurative inside knowledge of all of Klingon space and Klingon doings. So he's got to be there. And, you know, my warrior goddess, Philippa Georgiou, you know, in a leather cape.
Yes.
And I could have just shut off the episode at that point and said, like, I'm done. Like, this is the best ending to a Discovery episode ever. But then then it got better.
Well, yeah, because you hadn't even seen the, like, let's go to a sex club portion of put Discovery on all access so we can have an alien sex club.
Yeah, so we can basically have Mos Eisley on speed. Yeah. Right? It is a wretched hive of scum and villainy. You know, like, Tilly gets high. Ash plays Klingon craps with a K, because that's how Klingons spell craps. And Her Highness, the God Empress, decides to proposition two hookers to get information on this temple.
Right. Because that's why she wanted the...
Yeah. I mean, you know, if she's going to go ahead and blow up an entire planet, she may as well get her kicks before it happens, right?
Yeah.
And some...
Well, yeah. Starfleet is still footing the bill for her.
Exactly, yeah. Right. While she was high... Tilly finds out that the probe is a bomb the whole time, because, you know, we're just reinforcing the trope that, you know, you are more enlightened when you're on drugs.
Right,
you know, dare worked for me, kids.
Yeah. I love her character too. And she opens the suitcase like, Wait, that's not a probe. That's not a probe.
I have something to say about that particular scene, but we'll get there when we get there. Burnham figures it out. She trades Giorgio's freedom for the bomb, or specifically the detonator. She hands it to Laurel and says, Laurel, like, you go ahead. You threaten to activate this thing. You threaten to blow up Kronos, and everybody will follow you. And then, you know, and then this entire war is over. And you are in a lot of power. And Ash goes to rule with Laurel? Question mark. That was really unclear of what his role was, because he just kind of like went off with her at the end of the episode. Burnham gets reenlisted. The Spore Drive is decommissioned until they can find a non-human pilot for it. Because considering, you know, the training course that they needed to go through in order to get the one human pilot, it's kind of unsustainable. And then and it ends with Disco responding to a distress call from Captain Pike of the USS Enterprise.
Yes, Captain Pike.
And a little nod that I'm sure that made you squeal with delight, Regina, was that they end over the end credits, they played the original series theme song.
Yes. I had the biggest chills when they revealed that it was the Enterprise, and then the original series music started. I held my arm out to Chris. I'm like, feel that, like, feel that. And he ran his fingers across my arms, and they're like, it was like super bumpy. I'm like, wow, okay, Trekkie. Kind of a Trekkie here. Sorry. Yep. Sorry. Yes. Okay.
Sounds about right.
It was. Yeah. I mean, it was totally. And I'm sure, you know, I didn't realize how much I had missed the music until that moment, because there's a little bit of it in the opening music for Discovery.
Right.
A refrain at the end. But it's not the like full on song. And so as soon as it started, I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So before we go on to like our discussion of these two episodes, I just wanted to wrap up our predictions for anybody who's been following along. Let's see, Dante, do you remember what you said?
I remember saying that Ash was going to sacrifice himself for the greater good, and I'm going to give myself a half a point on that one.
Yeah, I'll give you a half a point on that one too, for him like making some, I don't know that it's going to turn out to be an altruistic decision, but I think he thinks that it is. So we'll give him that. Your main prediction was that season two was going to be the war with the Klingons.
I am extremely upset that that is not a thing that's happening.
Right. So that's not happening. Although I've heard it hinted online that it might be, that this is kind of a bait and switch of sorts. You guess it would end on a cliffhanger, but we all like kind of said it was going to end on a cliffhanger. And you also said that Burnham was going to have to watch Giorgio die again.
And yep, that was entirely wrong.
Yeah. All right. You know, she's still alive. So who knows what's going to happen with her.
She's still alive. So, you know, it's a thing.
Yes. Liam said that they were going to wrap up the war. So you got that one right, Liam. So they did end the war with the Klingons.
Again, for now, theoretically, for now.
For now, yes, exactly. Like I'm not 100% sold. Yeah, that this is done.
Are they going to give any of the territory back?
Yeah, they kind of glossed over the
formality as we knew it.
Yeah, they have to go ahead and set up the treaties, but you know, they'll bring in Picard for that, and it'll be fine.
Except he's 100 years away still, so.
He, yeah.
140 years away, something like that. Okay.
Something to that effect.
Lemmy also said that Giorgio was going to die, and that Saru was going to be captain for the next season, and that season two was going to focus on the Spore Drive.
I'm willing to go ahead and give him a point for Saru being captain, even though they made a big deal of him saying acting captain.
Right.
You know?
And that they're theoretically going to Vulcan to pick up the next captain, like what Sarek said in his many words, which was weird, but I don't believe that's going to stick.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to make it to Vulcan right away. I think James Crane is going to stick around as Sarek on Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Probably for a couple of few episodes.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes more sense. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I also said that Georgia was going to die, that she was going to sacrifice herself, that it was going to be her tactical mind that was going to solve the Klingon issue, which
I mean, maybe. I'm willing to give you a point on that one.
Yeah, because it really was like, it's not really her tactical mind, it was more her vicious.
Yeah, her, I don't like see her sacrificing herself for anything.
Her vicious, no. Cunning mind, yes.
Well, I thought that she would sacrifice herself for Michael was what I was thinking. Yeah. Because in the alternate, in the mirror universe, Michael was her daughter. So, yeah,
right.
Yeah, that there would be something about that that would make her want to keep her alive. And that they were going to find the Defiant, the Prime Defiant, which didn't happen. So, yeah, we didn't do too bad. We all had, you know,
what about yours, Gina?
Those were mine.
Oh, those were yours.
Georgia was going to sacrifice herself
for
Michael. That the tactical mind was going to solve the problem. Her tactical
mind. Yeah. For some reason, I thought you said that those were somebody else's, and I'm a jerk.
That's okay. So, anyways, what we have some talking points here. So, where do we want to start with these? Anybody have a place? Or anybody have something they really want to talk about, like, first?
I mean, I can talk about my warrior empress all day, but we probably shouldn't.
Let's ask Nicole. Let's ask Nicole, because Nicole watched the whole season in the last week.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I am totally not a Trekkie.
Yeah. Like she hates Trek.
I do.
Like hates it.
For the most part. Yeah.
Yes.
My husband loves it. I hate it. I actually liked this series because it felt different to me because it was like a single character focus, which made it easier for me to kind of relate. And it was, for the most part, less goofy.
Right.
I don't even know how else to describe it, except for the time travel episode. It was less goofy. But
I still love that time travel episode, but I mean, I love Trek, so.
Yeah, it's okay. But like, I think I told you, Regina, after we watched that episode, I told my husband, I'm like, oh man, now it's getting all Star Trek. And he's like, well, I'm like, but it wasn't, like, it wasn't up to this point.
Yep. Yeah.
But these last two episodes, he's probably not gone for good, but I'm really glad that Ash seems to be out of it because he's getting annoying.
Mm-hmm.
It's like too weepy. Like, okay, we get it. Get over yourself. I'm like, get out of here. Too much. Too much.
Yeah.
My husband had to tell me too, like when they were getting the distress call at the end of the last one, and you can see the number for the ship kind of popping up on the screen.
The NCC-1701.
Yeah. Yes. I was like hitting Chris's arm. I'm like, oh, do you know what this? And he's like, what?
That was like what Isaac was with me, only not as emphatic.
I was very emphatic.
Like, yeah. Just like, that's the Enterprise. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yep. It's pretty great. Yeah. Can I tell a really short side story about this? So I'm part of a roller derby league. And one of the skaters in my league, her name is Shaolin Spocker, which is a great name. And her number is 1701.
Nice.
It took me about 2.5 years of knowing this person before I finally realized, like, oh, that's the number of the... And then I immediately decided to commit Star Trek seppuku because I should have known that 2.5 years previously. That's the end of my story about the number 1701.
Well, it was, you know, it's not something you'd be, and any like casual fan might like pick up on, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you've known and sort of watched and pay attention to, you know, how they note the ships and all that stuff. So,
yeah,
absolutely. Anyways, though,
yes.
What are your other reflections then on the series? You know, you said it got kind of goofy, but you liked the singular focus that they had on mostly Burnham as a person. Even though, I mean, like, they did do a healthy amount of development on a lot of these other tertiary and secondary crew members.
Yeah. Yeah, but it still felt, everything seemed to be revolving around Burnham, which I really like. And I can't really explain like why that is, because like obviously I'm okay with sort of ensemble shows.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones. So, but I mean, but this, I it's hard to describe, but I just, it felt less like Star Trek to me, basically.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's one of the biggest things. Liam and I have talked about this too. One of the biggest critiques has been it's not Star Trek enough, which I've always felt is like the biggest catch 22, because if it was too much like the original series, or, you know, I mean, it wouldn't be like the original series because nobody would do that again. But if
Were they running around in scrubs and being goofy?
Oh, wait, yeah. somebody just posted a GIF the other day of the episode where they're on the lizard plant and Kirk throws the rock at the lizard. It's like literally a person in like a plastic suit that like bounces off him. It's like, oh, so scary.
My brother routinely uses that scene to justify why he doesn't want to watch Star Trek. Yeah. He's like, look at this world-class fight choreography.
Right. I really can't blame him for some of that. Yeah. But, you know, given the era, we definitely have to put it in its era.
Yeah.
But
one of the things that I did like about the goofy episode was the helmet that he was wearing, Mudd was wearing when he came out of the whatever the animal is called. It had like the antenna on the top of it.
Oh,
it
the like Gormagander?
Yeah. Yeah, but his helmet was like, it had like antenna on the top of it.
Okay.
So he was like, yeah, he looked like a goofy alien. And I'm like, okay. I mean, obviously that was a throwback to some of those stupid.
The Andorians. I think they're Andorians. Yeah, the blue ones.
Yeah,
with the,
there was a couple of them in this in these last couple episodes. One of the the hologram communication guys and one of the guys who boarded them. The blue guys with the antenna. Yeah, I like that too. He was clearly, he'd stolen it from someone.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah.
It had some other alien's physiology in it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I just love, well, I loved Mudd because he was a character in the original series. And so I loved him for that too, because they did a nice job kind of bringing him in.
Mm. Oh yeah. My father positively loved the fact that, that Mudd was back. There.
Hardcore Fenton Mudd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was great.
So anyways, cool. So we've got, I'm glad that you liked it. I was just about to ask you, my first question to you, Nicole, was going to be, where have you been these last couple of weeks? And you have answered this question satisfactorily. was waiting for the entire series so that you could marathon it, apparently.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, actually what happened is Regina and I are on the Geeking with the Moms, which we recently rebranded from Gaming with the Moms. We decided we were going to talk about things other than games, including TV. And I can't talk forever. Well, I could talk forever about Game of Thrones, but we can't talk forever about Game of Thrones on the podcast.
Right.
And Star Trek was out. I'm like, I kind of got to do this.
You know? Yeah. Like I said, and I kept talking about how great it was because we were talking about it. So I was like,
my husband, you know, Star Trek fan too. And he had been watching it. And he didn't even ask me to watch it because he knew that I hated it. But then I'm like, hey, I'm going to watch this. And he was really excited. So,
Well, Chris has the same issue with Star Trek that you have. Like, he doesn't like The Next Generation because he can't handle, he doesn't like episodic TV just at all. He likes TV that it has like an overarching story, which is why he can hang with like Game of Thrones and why he liked this track better than he's liked the other. And why we liked Enterprise better even than some of the more modern Trek, because at least there was not quite such an arc as you see here, but enough of a kind of continuous story that he could get more into it. I just make fun of him and tell him that he's really a fan of soap operas. It's really what he's saying.
That's hilarious.
That's where that genre comes from, like in TV,
That's
like a TV show that has a continuous story, used to only be, soap operas, because they knew everybody were watching them every day so they could continue to have them, have this story that continued on and on.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway. Well, Liam, what did you think? So what were your impressions of these last two episodes and how the show ended?
I liked that they sort of almost did a lower key ending.
Yes.
Because when you look back at any of the other Star Treks that did anything long running, which is really Deep Space Nine, and a little bit of the Enterprise stuff. I guess Voyager would try occasionally, but like everything Voyager did, they never succeeded
very well. Exactly.
With one or two exceptions. But I like that the all the bonkers stuff was probably episodes 10 to 13 or so, all in the Mirror Universe, because there was a bit before that, a bit after, but mostly the Mirror Universe stuff just ramped up and ramped up and ramped up. And then it sort of had a slow burn at the end. Like 14 in particular was a lot of just two-person conversations.
Yeah, that's true. Ones.
And it was an interesting juxtaposition between it. There was some, like maybe someone interrogated Laurel a couple times, or they ran into a bunch of wreckage. But other than that, there was a couple of conference room scenes, and then there was a lot of, yeah, two people talking. Each room, each scene would be just two people in a room having a conversation. Really, it's sometimes an intense conversation.
Right.
Like there was the Ash Burnham scene.
Right.
Retells him that I actually like that the redemption is solitary. Because the thing about Burnham is that she is so imperfect, which is sort of what makes her a really interesting lead character for a Star Trek.
Yeah.
Because other than, well, normally they try to make the captain this paragon. There's flashes here and there where they're not. Like, Sisko will have moments of moral grayness, or Janeway will make
Looney
Tunes and decisions. But Archer was sort of flat and boring. Archer would try to, they try to take Archer in some of the, he's desperate situations, but he'd never do anything bad.
Right. He would always be kind of on the cusp of it, but something would happen. So he didn't have to. He
stole that technology. Yeah. Having, we watched Enterprise fairly recently. He stole like a warp part from someone to literally save the entire planet.
Mm-hmm.
And they treated it as a huge moral thing. So that was like his one slip, or at least vaguely questionable thing, whereas Sisko would get his hands a little dirty sometimes.
Right.
But this time you had Burnham like actively wrestling with so much of what was going on the whole time. It got a bit melodramatic at times, but it also it was interesting in ways that Star Trek has not really done before.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You had to follow this person, and yet you had to roll with it being melodramatic in ways that Star Trek wasn't usually before, because usually it was just the person who was right about things moralizing and telling the people who were wrong about things.
Yep.
Whereas this time we had to watch her reckon with her own decisions and
and the outcome and the resulting, and like just watching the fallout of the war.
Yeah, right. And even the smaller stuff, like with Ash, because she's trying to tell him that he has to make this journey on his own to come back from what he did. But then also you realize in the end, it's like, but she doesn't. She realizes in the end that she has a crew now. She has done a lot of the work on her own, but she also, I think, in the next episode realizes that she's not alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because she gets, when she has the speech to Hollow Cornwell, she's doing the speech herself, but then Saru stands up, does the We Are Starfleet thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She looks around and sees the whole group standing up to stand behind her. So
Yeah.
It's
a lot of really good character moments in a in a franchise that had them, but in much different ways, and these ones almost feel more interesting.
Yeah,
I agree. Well, and I'm really glad too that Burnham wasn't Ash's redemption, because so often the story is the wronged woman, or the woman who's been raped forgiving her rapist. He didn't rape her. I'm not trying to say that, but that storyline of like the absolution having to come from the female character for someone who has done a wrong like that is pretty tropey. You know, it's a pretty strong trope. And I was standing there and I was watching, or I wasn't standing, I was watching Burnham stand there and confront him. And I'm like, if she gives into this, I'm gonna quit. And I haven't said that in this show really at any point past, you know, being kind of questionable about the pilot episodes not being everything I had thought they were going to be. But had she capitulated on it and had she given in to him, even in episode 15, had she given in and said, no, don't leave, you know, don't take this away from us or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, had some sort of thing like that, I would have not been happy. But she was content to let him go, and she was content just to stay there and say, you know, this is not, I can't be this with you anymore. Yeah. So
I also like that it was a lot of the writing ends up being clever and even a little self-referential, but without being awful about it,
mm-hmm.
as a lot of stuff when they try to do that can be.
Yeah.
I guess I was saying to you, Regina, before we started that I was skimming through the episodes just real quick and I was mm-hmm. taking a few notes, but there was one of my favorite bits from both of the episodes was Saru talking to Cornwell. And she was like, I felt so stupid. And then he literally says that Lorca was an imposter from an alternate universe. It's not the most obvious conclusion.
Right.
We're all deceived, which is funny because it's the sensible thing to say in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the fans had sort of figured it out from the beginning. I think
right.
we mentioned last yeah. week, like some people were just theorizing anyway. Some people were theorizing for silly reasons that they thought he was too imperfect to be Starfleet. He had to be Mirror Universe. So they sort of backed into the right answer.
Right.
Yeah.
But I felt that was a really fun sort of like, wink.
Yeah, a little.
But not a stupid wink, because sometimes right. when TV wink at the audience, it's bad.
Right. It's like, let's blink the whole screen instead of like, let's just give you a little hint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then even they let every character comment on the theme of things without it being and to start tie things back to Star Trek in general, because that's one of the other complaints people really had about the show was that it doesn't feel like Star Trek at all. Whereas I know it's such a weird thing to talk about because half the things that we even like about it it doesn't really feel like Star Trek, and that's a good thing because right. Star Trek can be tired mm-hmm. and
well,
dull.
Yeah.
But also,
yeah.
they make it feel like Star Trek in the important ways. Like you have mm-hmm. Sarek talking to Burnham, basically at the end of both episodes, but at the end of 14, when he's leaving Discovery, mm-hmm. and he's just talking to her for the first time about, he found out about Ash, and he found out about a lot of stuff, and it's like, what greater source of peace exists than the ability to love our enemy?
Mm.
Yeah.
And don't regret loving someone. And it's like, well, yeah, and those are really important Trek ideas. Like,
yeah, exactly. Those are some of the fundamental, foundational ones.
It's just they're really mm-hmm. shining a light on the stuff that I sort of thought was there the whole time, but that naysayers were very much like, no, they don't understand this at all. The writers are just burning Star Trek to the ground. It's like,
yeah,
give these people a bit of credit.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Burnham's speech at the end is like one of the most Star Trek things I've ever seen. Like, you don't get much more Star Trek than standing up in front of everybody and saying, you know, we had to do this together, and this was, right. you know, how we had to do it, and it took yeah. all of us, you know, making the mistakes that we made and making the choices that we made to get here. And so, you know, I can't imagine. I was interested in the pacing of episode 15. I hadn't seen a spoiler, but there was someone on my Facebook who had posted like 3 times in the hour that she had watched it about how it was such an amazing episode. And she was literally shaking because of what had happened. And so my mind jumped kind of like you were saying, Liam, to, you know, what's going to be the big event? Because at this point, you know, we don't have a big event coming.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, no, we really don't. We've got we've got the distress call. But the distress call could be anything.
Right.
I think it's clear. I mean, like, it's obviously clear that CBS wasn't sure that this
right.
show was going to take off.
Yeah. They're cautious.
Rocket ship pun. Take
right.
off. so they.
Space.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they wrapped it up, which is fine. And like, it is smart of them to not have ended this on a cliffhanger, because that would have been extraordinarily arrogant of them to just kind of assume that, yeah, we're going to go ahead and get a second season. Huzzah. Knowing all of the stuff that Ian let us know about last week with regards to all the drama that was happening on the set and the showrunners leaving, because I don't follow all this stuff. I watch the show once a week and I turn it off, and then I do this. Like, this is the extent of the interaction that I have with the show. where are we going to go from here?
I think that those. Oh, Sugar, sorry.
No. That was the end. I'm posing that question. Where are we going?
Yeah. Well, that's what I think is interesting about. Like, I'm not really sure where we're going, and I kind of like that. I like that. I feel like this story was complete, and it was challenging, and it was interesting. And I feel like you mentioned in the notes, thanks to Dante for putting the notes together for me so I could day drink for Valentine's Day.
living kids. We're all adults with real jobs. We can day drink now.
Both Burnham and Ash have redemption arcs, and I think that's very Star Trek as well. Mm-hmm. And it may not be like, you know, one of the original series episodes that I always tend to bring up because it was so outrageous was, I forget what the name of it is, but it's in the third season, and they find a race who is chasing like one person from the race that has escaped, and they literally have like one half of their face is black and one half of their face is white. Mm. And like the conflict is because the guy who's escaping is escaping and he's a prisoner and he's all this, and because his face is like black on the opposite side of the cop's face, like yep. It's literally, they're just like flipped around. It's like, the Sneetches. It's Dr. Seuss's The Sneetches, right? The cool ones have the belly tattoos or whatever, and the Sneetches without them don't, like, right? So it's basically that story. and you know, it's 1969 or whatever when the last season was airing, and it's, you know, the civil rights and whatever. So how much more heavy-handed can you get?
Right. I mean, you can't really.
Then literally black and white faces against each other.
Yeah. No. I mean, we all know that, you know, Roddenberry was the original, you know, he was the original social justice proponent inside of genre filmmaking. I'm sure people did it before him, but nobody was as in your face about it as Roddenberry was. I was just reading an interview with Nichelle Nichols the other day for an article that I'm writing for the Geek Embassy, which should be coming out in the next week or so. Self-plug. And Nichelle Nichols was recounting her conversation with Dr. Martin Luther King about how he personally called her and entreated her to stay on the show because her presence was just so important to black people in the community at that point. And she in turn went and talked to Roddenberry about it. And according to Nichelle Nichols, Roddenberry just kind of smirked and said, "Finally, someone gets it." And I'm sitting there like, so look at that. Like, Roddenberry was trying to get that kind of a reaction out of probably white people, but he got it out of, you know, one of the most important Americans to ever come out of this country.
Yeah. Yep. You knew the significance, but yeah, I've heard her tell that story before too. I've heard, heard that and heard her, you know, talking to him about the way he was telling the stories at that time and how he was kind of sneaking, you know, morality tales really into this.
Oh, well, yeah.
Shh, don't tell anybody.
Let's be real. Like, it's also at the same time that, that Ray Bradbury is writing, Fahrenheit 451.
Right.
If I have my dates correct. Yeah. Yeah, which is
pretty important.
Just about as heavy-handed, and that kind of starts the trend of science fiction as social critique, because it's the best way that we have to do it. And speaking of social critique, we got a little bit of Ender's Game in here too, where you know, where we have, you have the question on, like, you know, like, do you win or do you consider the way in which you're winning?
Right.
Well, like, there's that, that's prevalent throughout, like, throughout these last, I'm going to call it 3 or 4 episodes, but, like, really amped up in this one.
Yeah.
Like, especially in episode 15, like, you know, we were just talking about how there's so much, you know, face-to-face and one-on-one conversations. I mean, there was also another big face-to-face one-on-one conversation with Laurel's face and Philippa Giorgio's fists.
Right.
You know, in her roundhouse kicks as well. As she's basically beating the crap out of her, you know, say, you know, basically, you know, tell her, you know, like, you're going to tell me where the weak spots on Kronos are, and you're going to tell me now, and I'm going to, like, bust your wrists and break your shoulders and kick your face in and make you bleed until you tell me these things. Like, and it was just, oh, God. Like, you know, I mean, I think it says a lot for Burnham's redemption arc that she has to be the one to say, stop, that's enough.
Right. And
she starts the series out as a, you know, as a gung-ho, you know, like, renegade mutineer.
Right. Take the, you know, take the outcome of the universe in her hands.
Yeah, exactly.
With no consideration for what's going to happen with it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that just shows, well, Burnham's got stones. You know, she stood up to she stood up to an emperor who has the visage of a person that she loved like a mother. You know, and an admiral, a person who, like, who almost literally holds the rest of her career, you know, in her, you know, in her hands, because, like, with a few signatures of a pen, Cornwall can basically blacklist Burnham from Starfleet for life.
Right. Again, and or Burnham, send her back to the penal colony that she was slated for.
Yeah, exactly. Or send her back to the penal colony and have her live out the rest of her days as a cold, bitter woman.
Yeah.
And she's got a lot of stones to go ahead and basically get up in her face and tell her, like, this is not how Starfleet operates. It is how we win is just as important as the fact that we do win this war.
Right. And part of what you're talking about here brings up, like, there were two things that I wanted to talk about the choice to put this show on All Access.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've all complained about having to have another subscription service to just watch this one show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, why did they do that? And I think it's interesting because looking at the show as a whole now, I think we can see that there are certainly levels of violence that we wouldn't have seen if it was broadcast.
No.
And there were also levels of sex that we also wouldn't have seen had it been broadcast, which they saved, you know, for the last episode when they're like, oh, right, we can take people's clothes off.
Yeah.
So they had us go to a strip club because why not?
I mean, a couple episodes back, let's not forget, because I can't forget it, so you all are never going to forget it, the sex scene that they had between Tyler and Laurel.
Right. Yes.
And all the
violence with all the flashbacks he's having about the torture, all of that. Mm-hmm. Was right along there too, with, you know, on the lines of things that you could absolutely not have on regular broadcast TV. So I think it's interesting because that is definitely one way they pushed past what we've seen of Star Trek before, and at least in the TV shows. I didn't even think that there's been, like, that much sex or violence in the movies now that I'm thinking back about it.
I mean, there's been, like, fun, goofy sex, you know, like with Kirk basically trying to go ahead and, you know, procreate with every alien that has two legs and a set of breasts.
Or multiple breasts,
you know. Like, hey, look at that. Do you have something?
Yeah, but that was always, that was in the 60s too. So, I mean, even what was insinuated there was mostly, like, you know. There wasn't.
No, you have to tell me this.
You didn't see anything. Like, you didn't actually see. Like, there were a couple of, like, hot and heavy kisses you might have seen, but you never saw Kirk, like, go off into a room with a chick. Like, there was just always the insinuation that he was the ladies' man.
Yeah.
And then there was the mostly sexless Next Generation.
Yeah, I mean, there was that one episode where what's her face, Dr. Crusher. kind of had a relationship with a space ghost.
With a ghost?
With a space ghost who animated her dead grandmother because reasons. You know, that was just weird.
There was something in their DNA, her line of DNA, that allowed the ghost to inhabit them.
Something, and it lived something. In a lamp.
And it, yeah.
Ended up in a lamp, and then it electrocuted her friends.
Yeah.
And it was only at that point that she realized that something was wrong.
Yeah.
You know, not the fact that a ghost is talking to her. Anyways, we've largely had sexless Star Trek up until like the insinuations with the most recent J.J. Abrams movies. Because they show a couple of scenes of Chris Pine, you know, like, you know, in his underwear with a green woman, and that goes beyond like playfully implying, and goes into just like, yeah, like this has been happening for a while.
Yeah,
I think Enterprise with the decontamination stuff.
Yes, I was going to bring that up too.
I never.
That was a blatant attempt.
Yeah. Go ahead, Liam.
No, that was just a blatant attempt to have something to stick in previews so people would watch UPN next week.
Yeah, right. there was
the Vulcan lady putting the gel on herself or on Scott Bakula.
Yeah. Yeah. Where she was crawling around in the decontamination chamber in the red light and sweaty and
Of course, because why wouldn't you?
Right. Yeah. So, yes, there were. I was thinking of that, too. That was the only, like, sort of super sexual scene I could think of beyond Beverly Crusher's ghost lover.
Mm-hmm.
And there is there's Vosh. I mean,
you have Picard's, like, silk bathrobe.
Yes, Picard's silk bathrobe. And then there's Vosh, the woman that he kind of, the archaeology woman that he dates, that he goes on the adventure with.
Mm-hmm.
When he goes on vacation, they force him to take vacation, and Riker sends him to the sex planet. I can't think what it's called.
Risa,
yes.
Oh, wait. How could we go ahead and forget the best Star Trek villain ever, the Borg Queen?
Right.
The Borg Queen, who basically like exuded sexual confidence there.
Yes, that's true.
You know, like she had that entire thing where like she grafted the skin onto Data, and then she like blew on it, and he was like, ugh. He got a little bit of a robot. Yeah, I'm not going to say it on air because
he had sensations.
He most certainly had sensations, and I'm sure that his parts that are anatomically correct were sensated.
Fond of, yes.
Anyways,
I am thinking about writing an article about sex and Star Trek Discovery, just to talk about how it was portrayed in the series and why I think that was one of the reasons why they chose to have it on All Access. I'm hoping, at least. But Dante had a question. What was that?
Oh, I just think it's a purely cynical reason they were putting it on All Access, just to
get people to subscribe.
Well, that, and to an article I read a few months ago, was that it's basically CBS All Access is a cheap way for them to be able to hardball local stations for higher rebroadcast rights.
Oh.
The thing I've heard is that because there certain rebroadcast rights are worth this X amount of money, but if they can have this other streaming venue that goes, well, we have this that brings in this X amount of dollars per viewer, which is much more important because each person pays in this wildly huge amount of money rather than the pennies that come in for each thing through channels. Episode. So
yeah,
it's basically negotiating leverage is what I've read.
Yeah. I think I read an article saying that too, that like they didn't care. Like they weren't trying to, they weren't even trying to make money off All Access. They were just trying to leverage it.
Yeah. And even so, they only have, two or three original shows on it. This is one of them. This one was expensive and kind of a boondoggle.
Right.
Yeah.
With all the delays and the over budget.
Yeah.
It also, they're much more upfront with their subscriber numbers than, say, a Netflix is, or a viewer numbers. They don't say who, how they don't, they haven't come out and said how many people watched a certain thing, but they're going, oh no, we like to the our sign up rate tripled or something when Star Trek started, which doing the math on it means like, well, they at least come close to breaking even on putting the show out, and then Netflix pays to air it around the entire world. So
right,
and they renewed this season. They renewed Star Trek like relatively early on in the run.
Yeah, I don't even think it was like 5 or 6 episodes in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If that even. They were like, oh no, we're doing a second season. So
yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely by the mid-season finale. They were just like, yep, sure. We got it.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So one of the questions Dante has here that I want to make sure we don't miss is when is the last time we had a real complex and dynamic relationship between two lead females in genre TV?
I mean, and like, and to be clear, like, I am not limiting this to just Star Trek. Like, I'm talking about all genre television, like all sci-fi, all fantasy, all, you know, like all things that are not like normal television. I mean, Nicole, you're gonna be able to better answer this for, you know, Game of Thrones, because I know there's a lot of lead women characters in there, and I don't know what their relationships are because I have watched an entire season and a half of it.
They don't have a lot of relationships with each other is the thing. The only like the largest relationship I think that's happening now at least is Sansa and Arya. Cersei doesn't interact with anybody because she is Cersei. Right. So it'll be interesting to see all that, but like, yeah, there's lots of great strong women in Game of Thrones, but they don't interact with each other. But they will in the last season because everybody's going to have to.
That's interesting.
Well, huh. I think it'll be interesting to see Daenerys and Cersei.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Once that finally comes to fruition, which I'm not sure exactly how it's going to come to fruition, but it's got to.
Yeah, so like I'm going ahead and I'm running through every single Marvel and DC movie that I possibly can, and searching for like the 7 women that are, you know, that are there in between all those movies, and I can't think of.
I mean, you barely have them have conversations in some of those movies, you know, like Bechdel test and whatnot. Like, yeah,
yeah, I cannot think of any movie. Yeah, any one of those movies that has more than one prominent lead female character, so Captain America: Civil War has Black Widow and Scarlet Witch, but
they
don't really talk all that much.
And Peggy Carter's niece too. Hmm? Peggy Carter's niece.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sharon Carter.
Yes, Sharon Carter. She's in there, and she talks to Black Widow.
Kind of. You know, and she has a in the comics she has a very close relationship with her Aunt Peggy, but that is never shown in the movies.
It's only insinuated.
No, it's insinuated.
When she gives her eulogy and she talks about, I just watched Civil War. That's the only reason why I know these things.
Oh God, Civil War is just so good.
It is really good. But Black Panther's coming, so yes.
Oh my God, Black Panther.
Yeah, it's opening tonight.
Internet land, I want you to know that how dedicated I am to this website is that I am here recording this on Thursday night, and Black Panther is happening in a theater that is not 10 minutes away from me, and I am here.
You still have time to make a midnight show.
I mean, that assumes that there's a midnight show, and that also assumes that I don't have to get up for work at 5 o'clock in the morning tomorrow.
I'm just saying there are other extenuating circumstances in
this. You be quiet. No one asked you.
I want to answer the question, first of all, because I think I've got the answer that if anyone isn't already screaming at the radios, it probably will. I would say Orphan Black.
Okay, that is a show that I haven't seen.
Me too.
Is that the one that's dealing with like Dracula and stuff like that?
Nope. Clones.
Frankenstein?
Clones.
Okay. Orphan Black.
5 minimum? At least 4. Probably. We haven't watched the final season yet, but it's 5 clones of Tatiana Maslany, who's amazing, as all of these different characters.
Okay.
It's her, the relationships with herself, but they are all. The core of it is how these the clones discover each other and work together to take down the group that made them and makes their lives hell.
Okay.
Oh, and now, of course, you said clones, and so I immediately thought of Dollhouse.
Okay.
Had female characters with that were good friends, and that made me think of Firefly.
Wait, who? Wait a second. Who did they have the relationship with in Dollhouse?
The two.
It was Echo and who? Was it Echo and Whiskey?
I wouldn't say any of those since they're that strong enough, and that there's enough weird problematic stuff going on with that show that I wouldn't.
Yeah, I haven't watched it since it first came out, so I might be misremembering, but I thought Echo and one of the other female dolls were friends, but...
Maybe. It may have been it may have been Echo and Whiskey. Like I as I'm sitting here looking at my complete series of DVDs that I literally haven't watched it in years.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, so we've got one, we got Orphan Black.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of
Buffy.
I really thought I just had another one, but I cannot recall what it is, and it's relatively new, but it just slipped my mind completely.
Yeah. But yeah, Firefly, we don't really have too many complex relationships between two women. Like the closest that we get is the occasional glimpse of Kaylee and Nara. But that's like that's hardly like a defining relationship of the show. But yeah, like I was gonna default to Buffy though.
Yeah.
With Tara and Willow and with Tara and Willow and Buffy and Dawn and Buffy and Willow.
Yeah.
Buffy and Anya and
I wanted to say something like Gilmore Girls, but that's not
it's not genre television.
No. and they annoy me for other reasons sometimes.
Well, I mean that's the thing is like if I wanted to go ahead and look at females having complex and deep weird relationships, I would look at I would look no further than Sex and the City. Sex and the City and Friends and all of their fun stuff. Like it's sad, we got to go back 20 years at this point to Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right. Yeah.
To go ahead and get one of those and and Orphan Black. Like if Ian hadn't brought up Orphan Black, I wouldn't have even guessed it because I never seen the show, even though people keep yelling at me that I should probably watch it. But yeah, it's surprising to me how rare this is. I didn't get to watch the episodes twice. I would have really liked to. But unfortunately, due to time constraints, just didn't happen. But it really struck me that a hallmark of this series was the relationship between Philippa Giorgio and Michael Burnham. To the point where it is devastating for regular universe Giorgio to see that she's been betrayed and she's been her right hand person is a mutineer, and we go around and we see almost an opposite side of that at the end of the series where their relationship is tested again, where Giorgio is at once and not really the same person. Mm-hmm. And I positively love what this show does in exploring the complexities of this relationship, because she you can see that those two have a lot of chemistry, both as actors in the real world and as characters on the show itself. And I felt like the way that the show was directed and scripted, with regards to scenes just between the two of them, just how much these two, fed off of each other and influenced each other. And even if we can confidently say that Philippa Giorgio is still a terrible person, at the end of the series, Burnham still manages to learn and learn from her and respect her and and becomes that person that stands up in front of Starfleet while she's getting her Medal of Honor, right, and repeats, "Yes, we are Starfleet."
Right.
And to a certain extent, like, you know, you saw what you saw, Giorgio come to understand, even if she didn't appreciate the fact that they were trying to show mercy, and that they were trying to use subterfuge and cunning instead of brute force. She didn't appreciate that they were doing that, because she would rather just assassinate an entire world. But she understood. I feel like she understood, why they wanted to go ahead and do this, mm-hmm, even if it just doesn't phase her as an option that she would even entertain.
Right. Yep. Her arc as well, I think, is pretty, it's short, and it's not something we get a whole lot of exposure to. I'm not 100% sure that she's changed in any fundamental way, but
yeah,
I think too that she's recognizing in that moment that Burnham has taken on a little bit more cunning in terms of what she learned in the mirror universe, mm-hmm, in terms of how to make a deal, in terms of, you know, what is the least damage we can do in this situation. So, and I think that that's an important sort of depth to her character, because I think in some ways Burnham was very all or nothing. And I think she's a little bit more gray now in how we can look at her.
Yeah. I mean, I disagree. I think that Giorgio has, I don't know if she has changed, but she has, like, she is at the very least exposed that she has a soft spot.
She had a soft spot when,
she had a soft spot, but I think over the course of the last four episodes, like, we have gotten a very clear impression that she will hesitate to, or she will not hesitate to murder anyone. You know, anyone who shows weakness, anyone who's getting in her way, anyone who's stopping her from doing what she's doing. And by the end, we've had Mira Giorgio like outright threaten to, you know, to basically execute her and throw her in the brig for challenging her authority. Like, Giorgio had every reason to just go ahead, pull a phaser, and shoot Burnham in the face, and she didn't.
Well, yeah. I don't think there was any way she could have, considering that she was her daughter in the other universe. So, you know, she was looking at least at her daughter's face, even if it wasn't her daughter's temperament.
Even if it wasn't really her daughter.
Right, exactly. All right. Well, I had a few rapid fire questions I wanted to wrap the episode up with.
Sure.
We did this for our Runaways episodes. I thought it would be nice to finish the finale of,
we can do this.
Yes, with, mm-hmm, Star Trek Discovery with this. So, all right, your favorite character. So, Nicole, who was your favorite character?
Tilly.
Liam.
I thought about this. How do you give it? It's got to be Tilly. With the gut. I love Burnham, and I really love Saru.
Yeah,
it's tough to know when I loved Lorca, as weird as he was.
Yeah,
and Stamets has his moments, but just Tilly started as like one of those characters that I was worried I would really hate. But she is the best, and especially this last episode. Even those were some of my notes, like just the, oh man, running into Giorgio.
Yes.
After Giorgio insults her hair, and she's like, "I know, what is happening?" And then Clint Howard gets her really high, and she says that to Burnham over the communicator, like, "First of all, I'm really high, but you have to listen to me."
I know. I just love
her. She's
the
one that always swears. It's just, it's all so good. And she was eating the space whale.
You guys should have some. She's coughing it out.
Oh, it was great.
I know there are probably better, like, the other ones. That is not to say that Burnham, any of the others are bad. Like, I think Burnham is actually a really great lead character. I think Saru is fascinating, and I really do hope they just do what they feels like they mean to do and make him captain.
Yeah.
But Tilly's just so much fun.
Yeah, I know.
Like in 14, she's always the one, and she's done this from the beginning. Whenever they sit down and have a meal in the mess hall, like, she's trying to get Burnham to talk about her feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, she does that explicitly. He's like, I love talking about feelings. And yeah, she's the one who gets Ash to open up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
She was the first to go to Burnham when she was in the mess as well, right? And broke mm-hmm. the, because she sat by herself and yeah. nobody wanted to be around her, so.
Yeah.
But like, she started out as a walking cadet with sleep app, with a CPAP machine joke.
Right, yeah. Right. That's right, I forgot about that.
Yeah. And then she's Captain Killy, and then
right.
she just had so much. Dante, she's my favorite too, so was she your favorite, Dante? No. Giorgio.
I mean, let's be real here.
Leather.
My warrior goddess.
Yes. All right.
The Emperor Philippa Giorgio, specifically like Mirror Universe Philippa Giorgio, hands down favorite yeah. character.
Emperor. Giorgio. Emperor Giorgio, not Captain Giorgio.
Yes, that's what I meant.
All right. Okay. What's your favorite ship? So which two characters would you like to see in a relationship? Nicole.
God, I don't know. See, this is like what I don't like about Star Trek mostly, is it's too much of this stupid, I keep calling these stupid, too much relationship drama stuff. So,
oh, but that's not Game of Thrones. Come on.
Different,
I was going to say that. I'm glad somebody else did.
I don't know. It feels different. No, seriously, Regina, like, don't you agree with me? It's got a different feel to it.
I mean, like, how much drama is there around the fact that, like, Cersei and Jaime are, like, shooting out a bunch of kids? Like, I mean, that's, like, the whole thing is, like, related back to the drama of their inappropriate relationship.
You know, like, not to mention that Jon Snow is kind of, like, snogging his aunt right now before he realized that she was his aunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he still doesn't know yet. I don't know. I don't know these. I don't feel like I know these.
You know the characters well enough. Well enough. I had a hard time coming up with this too. I think I'm still on the fence about my choice. Do you have anybody you ship, Liam?
Not really.
Yeah.
I tend to just go with what's on there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've just never had the mindset to pair up characters who aren't together. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What about you, Dante?
Is this going to come as any surprise to you? Do I really need to say this?
Well, you have to ship Giorgio and somebody.
It's going to be Giorgio and Burnham.
Oh, see, I'm going to go to Giorgio and Tilly.
Ooh. Oh, all right. I'm changing my answer.
Because that was mine.
Giorgio and Tilly, yes. Let's do this.
Yes, but we did a shipping episode a while back, and I shipped Darth Vader and Sauron. So I like mixing the dark.
No, that's great. Yeah, my favorite ship of all time is Captain America and Bucky.
Right. That's the one, right?
Because it's amazing. But yeah, absolutely, Giorgio and Tilly.
Yep.
Yep.
All right, let's do favorite plot twist. We have a lot to choose from.
Mine was the Lorca.
Lorca, Mirror Lorca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Liam?
I think it's just that the Mirror Universe turned out to be such a central thing.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much it was a twist, because obviously they ended up there and you didn't fully suspect it. But again, I sometimes spoil myself for behind the scenes things. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like Jonathan Frakes saying, we went to the Mirror Universe, and based on past experience in my Trek brain, that just like, well, that means they're going to do a one-off thing that has no impact on anything.
Right. Not that the whole thing is about.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that it's literally central to the entire plot of 15 episodes.
Yep.
And that was, and that they made it work.
Yeah. That they did it well, Like that was really the payoff of it, is like, oh, but Killy in that Captain Killy with that wig hair. Oh. Man, I really hope that the disco cosplay is off the hook this year, because it really should be. And it needs to be all mirror cosplay, because those mirror, I mean, the Federation uniforms are really awesome. They're good looking. They're, you know,
oh, yeah, they look slick.
Like,
Yep.
Yeah, they're slick. They don't look like pajamas anymore. They don't got the poofed out, you know, legs coming out of their boots. So, you know, they did a lot for those. And I really like the sleek lines on the sides and stuff. But man, those Mirror Universe uniforms with all the gold and Killy's hair. Oh, Killy's hair just, oh, I just freaking loved it.
Yep.
All right, Dante, favorite plot twist.
Don't you bow before your emperor?
Yes, that's mine too. Emperor Giorgio, for sure. Just because I felt like Lorca was always so bad that I didn't really feel a whole lot of like surprise with what happened with him. But Giorgio, I just like it just completely caught me off guard. All right. And the last rapid fire, what are you looking forward to next season? What are you kind of hoping for, if anything? Nicole?
I don't know. More of the same, basically. Like,
more focus on Burnham.
More focus on Burnham, or if they're going to switch the focus, still keep it really sort one of character. Rotating around.
Yeah, tight on one character.
Yeah.
What about you, Liam?
I hope it doesn't turn into a big, weird puzzle or mystery involving the original Enterprise. I like that they ran into it. Like, I didn't think they would go there.
Right. I didn't think they would either.
I thought it was a little on the nose, but also once I saw that ship fly in, like, yeah, that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, you got chills.
So I hope it doesn't burn the goodwill of it, but I'm also just fully on board no matter what anyway.
Yeah.
Because it impressed me so much.
Yeah, me too. I wholeheartedly agree. All right, Dante, what do you think?
Oh my God, what am I looking forward to next season? I am looking forward to several things. I am looking forward to the return of two characters. I am looking forward to the return of regular universe Gabriel Lorca. I am looking forward to the return of my warrior goddess. And I am looking forward to the, I guess this just wraps into a bold prediction. I am looking forward to Captain Killy coming from Mirror Universe into regular universe and kicking a lot of ass.
All right. I'd love to see that.
I am probably going to be 100,000% wrong, but that's okay. I just want more Tilly in my life. If I can't have Michelle Yeoh in my life, I want Tilly in my life.
Killy Tilly, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Killy Tilly. Like, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Either one of them, really.
Yeah. Either one of them would work. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do. I'm looking forward to seeing Pike. I'm kind of hoping that Spock isn't on the ship, and then we don't have to deal with Spock and Burnham together.
That would be weird.
Or with some other actor trying to be Leonard Nimoy.
Or trying to be Zachary Quinto.
Or that.
Either way. All right. Can I just go ahead and make another hope for next season? I hope that they continue to explore other bits of the universe not related to the Enterprise.
Right, that they don't get stuck in, like Liam said, kind of a puzzle of trying to, like, fit all of this together now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the farther they are removed from what the Enterprise is doing, the better that this show is going to be.
On its own.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm looking forward to seeing how the Klingon thing ends up developing. Because even though they're not in war anymore, clearly, like, Laurel's going to have some stuff up her sleeve. But you don't need the original Enterprise in order to make that happen. You can do this with the Discovery, and you can do this in different corners of the galaxy. You don't need to. You don't need to go ahead and drag and interweave stuff from the original series into Discovery in order to keep Discovery good.
Agreed. All right. Well, thank you guys for joining for this discussion. Mm-hmm. The Geek Embassy Watches. We'd love to hear your thoughts and your comments. What'd you think of the finale of Star Trek Discovery? Are you looking forward to next season as much as we are? Go ahead and leave us a comment at thegeekembassy.com, our website. Catch us on Twitter at The Geek Embassy, or follow us on Facebook, or I guess like us on Facebook. Like us, please like us. On Facebook, you can catch Nicole and I every other week on Geeking with the Moms. So follow that as well. And until next time, get your disco on.